Welcome to Live the Fuel.
Welcome to Live
Welcome
the Fuel.
To Live the Fuel. Focusing on health, business, and lifestyle. And now your host, Scott Mulvaney.
All right, good day, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another Live the Fuel show. So today, I'm very excited to bring on yet another author, a professional speaker, and once you hear the name of the company that he helped founded many years ago, you'll recognize the name if you're definitely from the U.S. But since we have international listeners, I don't know how far his brand has reached, and I'm sure it is worldwide, but we'll talk more about that today. But most importantly, this gentleman, like I said, he has created a world-class company. He is an author. He's actually created a book called Your Catalyst for Change. We're going to talk about that since I'm a marketing nut and I love branding. And most importantly, his core brand is his name. So if you ever want to visit briansmithspeaker.com, you'll be able to learn more about Brian Smith, the founder of UGG, as in UGG boots. So Brian, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me.
This is exciting, man. All because we got connected. And I talk about this on other shows, but we got connected through Rick Brocchini. So Rich got us all connected up after I met him at Thrive out in California. Still there, Brian?
I'm still here, yeah.
Okay. So how did you get connected with Rich?
Just through a conference that I was speaking at. He approached me afterwards and loved the message, which most people do, because it's very unique. I don't have, pie charts and graphs or anything like that on how to improve your bottom line. I talk from the heart, and I talk with a lot of stories from the UGG boots, the era.
Well, and again, we were talking briefly before we started the episode here today, and it's been, I think you said 13 years?
Since when?
Since you sold the company.
Nearly 18 now.
18, wow. Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
And for our listeners, so you've been a professional traveling public speaker for now at least 3 years strong now, correct?
Yes, yeah. I wrote the book during the recession because everything else I was doing had slowed down. And never expected to be on the stage, but the book just sort of led me up there, and I turned out to be pretty darn good at it. So, mostly the message is good, not so much me.
Well, I think that's what it comes down to, right? Like, I mean, as long as you have a quality message or quality content that's actually going to benefit people,
yeah,
you can build almost anything from that.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, it comes back to customer service in a bizarre way.
Well, and I see I'm a big advocate for customer service. I've spent time in small, mid-sized companies. And I spent some time in some big, large corporate names like T-Mobile and ADP.
Oh, wow.
And
okay.
So I learned, especially at T-Mobile, I will say they were very adamant about creating world-class customer service. And clearly,
yeah,
a company like yours, you guys must have cared a lot about that as well.
Oh, it was critical for the early growth, and it was critical for when I was big and in trouble several times. My customers saved me over and over again.
When you were in trouble?
Yeah.
Could you catch us up a little bit on some stories there? Or
well, which?
what was the what was the first one?
Well, the first one was, the first trouble was when I came across the idea of importing boots, because I came to America looking for a business to take back to Australia.
Okay.
And when I got here, I realized there were no sheepskin boots here, but one in two Australians had some sort of sheepskin footwear.
Okay.
And so I thought I'd be an instant millionaire, and I imported 500 pairs and went on the road to sell, and my first year's sales was 18 pairs, because Americans just didn't get sheepskin, so that was the first one. And then I had a whole series of disasters ever since. In fact, the book that I did write, it's this Birth of a Brand.
Oh,
it's,
yes.
It's all about the travails of what every entrepreneur goes through in building a brand. And most of my friends or everybody, the readers, say it's like a page turner, because I'm sure they're not sure I'm going to be around next chapter. So even though there are lots of downs, there's also the corresponding number of highs that sort of balance it out and made the company grow.
Well, let's talk about that real quick. The highs and the lows, because I'm a huge health and fitness nut, and I love energizing people, and that's part of it's part of the Live the Fuel, right? Because I was a firefighter for a little while, and I love to fire people up.
Oh, okay, cool.
So what do you speak of when you say these highs and those lows? Because obviously you probably have plenty of stories about the highs as well.
I think the best way to frame that is that everybody's at a different stage in their business. So your audience will have, you know, people thinking about going into business, people who have just gone into business, people who have been in business 2 years and haven't got a clue if they're going to be successful. And then, and so I've, the theme of my book is you can't give birth to adults. And what that means is every business is conceived by somebody and then they take the first action. And my first action was buying 6 pairs of samples from Australia. And then it just goes into this horrible infancy. And there's no amount of overfeeding or, you know, shaking the cradle or urging this infant. It cannot get up and go to college, right? Okay. It has to be an infant. That in life terms is when most entrepreneurs want to give up because they've given birth, but they don't see any action. You know, maybe a giggle now and again, but it's just feeding, change diapers, feeding, change diapers. But then it'll hit the toddling stage, which is cool because then people are taking notice of your business. You know, they're writing articles about it. They're maybe, you know, the early adopters are, you know, raving about it online. And then it'll go into the youth phase, which is the best of all because you've got consistent orders coming in. The production's great. The billing and accounting's working and the customer service is fantastic. And you can grow a really sizable business, you know, $20 million in that youth phase. But if it's a really, really good product or service like UGG was, you'll hit the teenage phase and it, you know, all bets are off. You remember you wanted to be at every party in town when you're a teenager. Well, it's the same desire with a business. You want to be at every trade show in the country and you start taking on risks way more than you can afford. It's a super danger. I almost lost control about 2 or 3 times in the teenage phase.
So is that full circle and back to what you originally kind of hinted at those scary times that your customers had to save you?
Exactly. Yeah. And then, you know, ultimately it becomes a mature company with all the controls built in. But, you know, what I like to speak most about on stage is those early infancy years, because that's, you know, I have people come up to me afterwards and say, oh, Brian, I really needed that message today. I was about to give up my business. And now I understand where I'm at in the growth phase. And you've just given me so much impetus and so much momentum to carry on. And that's what really keeps me coming back to the stage.
So would you say that all those trials, all those tribulations of building a company as big as UGG, and now you're relating this to what you just hinted at, these small entrepreneurs who come and listen to you speak and learn from you, I guess it's probably a different kind of high, but what's the bigger high for you? Are you getting more of a high these days from the speaking or from when you're in that phase of building that successful company? Like, can you compare that?
It's funny. And it's a good question I've never been asked before.
All right.
If I wasn't getting the feedback from the, you know, the audience, I wouldn't do it. I don't need it for my ego and I'm not trying to make a lot of money at it. I'm doing it really to help. But when I look back on all of the, you know, I ran UGG for 17 years before I sold it. It got so big I couldn't finance it anymore, so I had to sell it. But when I look back, the best times were the earliest times when, you know, if you were looking from the outside, you go, whoa, why doesn't that guy just give up? You know, it's so hard. But I look back and all of those struggles was where I grew. Mm-hmm. And that was by far, looking back, it wasn't just a building thing for me. It was the fun stage, you know, the first trade shows where I didn't have a clue what I was doing. You know, looking back now, they were a lot of fun.
Yeah, it's like your first time you're setting up a trade show booth and it's like, oh, it doesn't look like anybody else's. Or because back then you don't have the capital or the cash flow to hire a professional marketing company to do a trade booth for you, for example.
No, it was throw together whatever you could. I was like embarrassed the first 2 or 3 trade shows I was in because it was such a hokey little thing. But it didn't matter because if I had had a, you know, $1 million trade show booth, nobody had heard of UGG anyway. I still wouldn't have sold anymore. Just, you know, those things have to grow.
Well, on the whole growth factor, and real quick, you mentioned something that I didn't want to miss over was you said it got so big that you had to sell it.
Yeah.
And that's a very interesting point. I don't really hear a lot. I'm a big fan of that Shark Tank show. And I love seeing this infusion of entrepreneurship. And that's kind of part of the target audience of this show is that There's so many areas and domains and lifestyles you could be targeting, but we talked earlier about how we discuss health, business, lifestyle, that balance.
Yeah.
But if I had to pick out two age demographics that I'm really trying to focus and support, it's the my generation, that X Gen, Generation X, and these and this new, you know, hustling, crazy millennials, you know, generation as well.
Sure.
So, but I don't really hear a lot about companies say it got too big and I had to sell it. Could you explain a little bit more behind that?
Sure. And this is only going to apply to your listeners who are in the products business, where they have to deliver a physical product.
Okay.
Because when you start out, you can usually get terms to buy $1,000 worth of product and then you go sell it, right? So then now you've got $1,500 or $1,800. So then you go and buy $1,200 worth of product. But that was fine for me the first couple of years. But as it started doubling every year, it was, okay, I need $1,000,000 worth of product. Shit, I don't have any capital. Where do I get the financing for $1,000,000? And I'd scrape it together through investors, and that would last a couple of years. And then I have to get $3,000,000 worth of product. Right now, if it was a 12 months of the year product, like pencils or, you know, blenders or, you know,
Penny costs, for example, these really cheap products.
So if it was like a 12 month cycle where you sold it, you got your money immediately, then you could roll it over. That would be one thing. But my purchasing all had to arrive in September, October, November, and then I would ship it October, November, December.
Wow.
Then I'd be scrambling for collections to get my money in. And if I doubled that season and the pre-season orders for next year would double, now I've got to buy $5,000,000 worth of product. Where the hell am I going to get the capital for that?
That sounds freaking ridiculous.
So I got it up to about $15 million, and just there was no way I could, you know, raise the investment money to do that, because even when it was that big, the investment bankers and the regular bankers are all still saying, "Oh, it's a fad; it won't be around next year," and it wasn't like I could point to a balance sheet that had steady sales for four quarters in a row. It just didn't happen.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting because, I mean, when you started that company, these new concept of like Shark Tank and this new show, and you got people like Damon and all these other big million billionaire investors. One of the biggest selling points I know that he uses in his pitch, and I think one of the other sharks, is that they have those manufacturing connections and they're willing to finance, you know, that and not really lend the money, but basically provide the cash stream needed to sustain that high quantity of manufacturing.
Yeah, and it's critical.
So basically, when you were doing this, those types of relationships weren't really around, right? This whole Shark Tank thing, I don't know if you follow it that heavily or not. But
Totally. Yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about. Well, investment bankers have always been around.
Okay.
But they're always very skittish. And a seasonal business scares the heck out of them.
Mm-hmm.
And also being in the they claimed I was in the fashion industry, which changed, like, you know, religiously changes every season. And they couldn't understand that my product was such a, you know, a well-rounded product that you could wear it, even though the buying season was only 2 or 3 months. The wearing season was pretty much all year.
Oh yeah, I had when I was managing T-Mobile, for example, I was managing one of their call centers and coaching and developing people there. I had employees wearing Uggs all the times, and
that's right,
spring and summer. And here, there's a big chain, UPS, the big shipping company, and they have UPS retail stores here. And I have a business account with them, and I have a mailbox there. And every time I swing by, there's a woman there. She wears her Uggs year round. Doesn't matter if it's spring or summer.
Well, you can't get an investment banker to believe that. That's the problem.
I could just photograph it and show them. So in that situation, is that why, for example, Shark Tank is different for companies now than when you were struggling to build, because you were forced to work with investment bankers, whereas now you got this whole new concept where I know the sharks are kind of like the investment banker, but they're willing to take a bigger risk, I guess, than a classic investment banker.
They're a hybrid of investment bankers and angel investors.
Okay.
But, you know, I've heard on the grapevine that very few of those things ever get funded. Once they do all the due diligence and they realize what all the skeletons that are in everybody's closet, you know, because every entrepreneur starting out has to do weird deals just to keep surviving from day to day, month to month. And they get, you know, investors in with, you know, investor A has one deal, investor B has a totally different deal, investor C has a totally different deal again. And so when these sharks get in and figure it all out, they go, oh my God, it's too messy.
I have noticed that they prefer, they really get all excited. You can almost see them drooling at the mouth when they see a company come in there or a startup come in there and they haven't taken on any investors yet.
Exactly.
Because then they're all excited, like, great, it's just me or it's just or three sharks. They prefer it that way.
That's correct. Yeah.
So it sounds like your lifestyle was definitely clearly different back then. When you were talking about these struggles and really depending on your customers, obviously you hinted there you really cared a lot about customer service. Is that one of the reasons why you became such a nut about customer service, is because of the dependency on your customer base to keep you afloat and keep you growing?
No, it wasn't that obvious to me. It came subliminally, because I was always, at first it was like they would laugh when I walked into a, because I started in the surf industry because Australia, the California Surfers had been to Australia and were aware of the product because their friends had brought them back from Australia. Mm-hmm. So it was, that was the easiest point of entry. And I remember surf shop owners laughing at me when I came in the store with sheepskin boots. They were just going, you're crazy in California. But as they started to take them on and sell them, I was really embarrassed at first. So, you know, I was this little tiny guy with a bag of sheepskin boots going in. And I was also an accountant by trade. So I was terrified of sales.
Oh, but you were a numbers guy, though.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And so it took several years for me to realize that, you know, I was in one store, a surf shop in California here, and I was thinking as I'm organizing the shelves, you know, because my customer service was, so even if the owner wasn't there, I'd walk in and I owned that little bit of real estate where the sheepskin boots were in the store. Mm-hmm. And so I would swap out the size 13s, which I knew wouldn't sell. And I'd put 7s and 8s in there and I'd make sure the colors were all covered. And then I'd leave and I'd have a note for him on what I did, you know. Yeah. And so that one day I was in this store and I realized, my God, these guys bought $80,000 worth of boots from me this season. And they double it, you know, they keystone it. So I thought, geez, they just made $80,000.
Wow.
And it's a tiny little store on the Coast Highway. And I thought, the rent's not more than $3,000. That's $36,000. I've just paid the year's rent for the guy. I don't know what his staff cost, but I probably paid for one or two staff people. And I thought, that's just from UGG. So if I've covered all his overheads with UGG, every single thing else he sells in the store, from surfboards to trunks to leashes to wetsuits to t-shirts, is pure profit for him. And I realized how valuable I was to his business, that I started to take on a whole new attitude towards sales. And from now on, I wasn't in there trying to get something, like get a sale. I was in there giving profits to this guy. And so I took that out into every single store that I went to after that, from the smallest to the biggest. And it took on a teamwork relationship where, you know, my lifestyle became more hanging out surfing and playing golf with these guys than it was trying to sell. And, you know, when bad things happened during the business, which it happens to every entrepreneur, these guys came through and saved me over and over again.
Well, when you say save you, basically you're referring to their dedication and loyalty to the brand and working with you. Now, do you think, or from what you just described to me, and I'm a huge sales and marketing guy, so I'm always reminding people the power of the relationship. And I am not one of those hard sellers. If I'm involved in I can't stand that style. That's not my style. I'm like, build a relationship, plan for that long-term relationship, not the wham, bam, thank you, man sale. Because those come and go. Like you just explained to us, you're building relationships that should stand the test of time.
Yeah. And it's a little different in this age with clicks and websites and, you know, products. And you know, there's a lot of people just blow it off thinking, oh, I'll put it on the, you know, Google, or I put it on Amazon or Facebook and I get a click, wow, bango, I just made $8, you know. But the ones who are going to survive will be the ones who go back out to the customer and thank them, mm-hmm. or send a note in the box or personalize it some way and get a following. I do coach a few clients. I'm very selective about who I coach. But one girl has a lambskin shoulder bag, and her customer service is unbelievable. Mm. And she's got a following on Facebook, and her email list now is so huge. And the interaction, she'll put out a question to the, you know, what do you think of this color? I'm thinking of doing this. She'll get 200-300 replies like within an hour. And she's got such a rapport with her customers that it is possible to do it in this world of internet business.
Yeah, it's funny we're talking about this because I was at an event this morning. A guy I know, I've used him for some photography services. He was actually doing a speech to a Chamber of Commerce event here to some business owners about social media. And I've been working with social media forever. And the biggest thing that he and I ended up talking about for everybody was the difference between impressions and engagement. And all these stats and stuff they're talking about, oh, you got Twitter this, impressions, blah, blah, blah. And we said, listen, you can have thousands of impressions. It doesn't mean anything. What is your actual engagement? And what is your repetitive and consistent follow through to build those relationships? Because, you might have 10,000 impressions, but do you have a solid engagement? Are you creating that connection?
Yeah. It's so, so important.
Yeah.
Just a funny little story. Because I wanted to learn more about the inside operations of the bag business, I was down in the warehouse one night shipping, because we just had a big shipment come in from the manufacturer. And there was a process to folding and putting it in tissue paper. And in this one order, there was another envelope. And I said, what's this? And they said, oh, that's a $20 bill. I said, what's that for? Well, a customer had returned a bag for some reason, and there was a $20 bill in it. So they sent it back. I mean, what sort of customer service is that? You've just bought a fan for life.
And that shows the ethics, like the dedication, and the honesty. That's awesome.
And that's one of the reasons I'm with this client. You know, her ethics are just impeccable.
Well, you could tell she's, and here's the thing. She's building more than just a business. She's building a brand. And I talk about this a lot. I'm so excited that you and I are talking today, because I tell people all the time, like your brands will change per se. Your businesses will change. You may launch 2, 3, 5, 10 businesses in your lifetime, but the one core brand that should never change is you. Like my brand is Live the Fuel. And I own ScottMulvaney.com, but ScottMulvaney.com just redirects to Live the Fuel, because this is my core brand that I'm building the podcast and everything else.
Gotcha.
But I tell people all the time, I'm going to have other businesses. And if and when those come to fruition, I'm still the man behind all of that. So your ethics and who you are and how you build your relationships as you grow different businesses, if you decide to do that, you could probably, correct me on this, but people who are connected with one business and they love you will probably follow you to your other influences.
Yes. Well, I've started many businesses myself since selling UGG, and that UGG founder finds its way into every new business. He's the UGG guy, the UGG founder, and they've got such a positive experience from that business that they assume it's rolling over into all the others. And it's my, it's not a job, but it's my ethics that just keep me working to the highest set of values I can. And that's you don't teach that stuff. It's who you are.
Do you know for a fact if is that left behind in your legacy with the company? Are they still, I don't know, are you still connected at all? Do you follow up with them?
I'm still connected. In fact, next year we're planning on doing some joint stuff to promote the 40th anniversary. So
wow.
it'll, it'll be going back to the roots. So I'm really stoked about that.
That's going to be cool, especially if there's probably some long-term employees that are, that have like been there when you were there. I don't know.
There's one or two, yeah.
Yeah, that's going to be fun for them.
Yeah.
Well, so let's fast forward this. I mean, obviously, crazy lifestyle building a company to that big, to so big that you literally had to sell it just because of all the manufacturing inventory and everything else to maintain that. Now, fast forward that to today. It's just you. It's just your brand. It is your voice. It is your book. Are the stress levels the same?
Well, I've you know, matured, obviously.
Okay.
I've just become more worldly in looking at how things work. You know, the universe is in perfect balance, and if there's a down somewhere, there's a corresponding up somewhere.
Sure.
And what goes around comes around. In fact, there's a statement in my book that says, you know, nearly always your most disappointing disappointments will become your greatest blessings. Hmm. And I ask people to put their hands up, you know, in the audience, you know, who in the audience has had some disaster happen in the last 12 months that you look at now and say, thank God that happened, because look where I'm at now.
And I can fully back that up.
I would say 90% of people put their hand up.
And probably the remaining 10% are either lying to themselves or too afraid to admit it.
Yeah.
I mean, that's how we learn. I mean, I joked around about that the other day to somebody. I said, listen, I've learned more trying to become an entrepreneur than what I learned in university.
Oh, for sure.
And anybody who's worth their salt in the entrepreneurial or public speaking space like you, who's mentoring and coaching people, I hear the same thing across the board. They tell you, you can't beat making mistakes in real life.
No, it's the only way. And, you know, you don't really learn that much from success, although you keep doing it. All of this stuff comes from having to overcome setbacks and stuff. And that's the beauty of my book. And I've also done a little online course. We're just in the process of launching it right now. And that's it. Brian Smith speaker/course, and it's 15 little video tips on things you're going to encounter as an entrepreneur.
Okay.
And it's nothing you'll ever learn in college.
And that's out now?
It's about to be launched next week. Yeah.
Okay, because I didn't see it in your toolbar. I'm like, oh man, I went through the whole site.
No, we haven't even launched it yet. But,
all right.
The beauty of it is they're all my philosophies and. You know how you said you didn't learn it in university? Well, the stuff, all these 15 videos, you'll never find in college. Hmm. They're points of philosophy. And guess what the first one is? The importance of ignorance.
Ah.
Right?
I was actually expecting you to say something about being humble, but.
No. It's critical that an entrepreneur has a certain amount of ignorance, because otherwise you wouldn't start. It's like having a baby. If you knew what you're in for, maybe you wouldn't do it, you know? And the thing is, though, once you do start, things will start to fall into place that you would never have thought about that can help you. And you're going to hit the wall over and over and over again. But what I call them plateaus. You'll cruise along and you'll hit an obstacle. Mm-hmm. And you've got a choice. You can give up or you can climb over, right? And they cruise along again, you'll hit another one and you'll cruise along. And as long as you keep overcoming the obstacles, that's where the growth is, mm-hmm. right? You can say problem or whatever that is. And the more you overcome them and your competitors don't, that's when you start to get market share. So it's all about learning how to overcome obstacles. And those disappointments, you know, I've become so blasé that if something really bad happens, I just go, oh, shit. You know, that's good.
Like, oh, shit. All right. Well, I'll figure that one out next time and get over it.
No, I just say that. I say, that's good.
Okay.
Now, what's good about it? And I swear, within 24 hours, I've thought sort of circuitously and I've come up with something and I go, shit, that's even better than it was before. And so that's what every entrepreneur needs to be comfortable with, that it's okay. I don't know everything. It's okay. I will hit the obstacle. I'll figure it out when it happens.
You know, it's funny because a lot of people through social media and all these self-proclaimed coaches, there is a common thread that comes up. A lot of people word it as fake it till you make it. And I agree and disagree with that because, okay, ethically, don't be faking it too much that you're literally lying.
Right.
But to your point, the spinoff of that is what you're talking about is like, it's okay if you don't know everything you're doing, take action and figure it out along the way.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a saying that's really ancient that once you start out on a path, the universe will conspire to work with you. Have you ever heard that?
I have, not in those words, but there's that famous book and a movie. Some, like, my girlfriend thinks it's crazy, but you ever hear The Secret?
Yep. Yeah. Oh, big time.
Yeah. All about law of attraction. And there's fundamentals from that I truly do believe in. It's all about that positive energy.
Yeah. Let me give you my sort of simple version of that. Right.
Okay.
Cause as I said earlier, the universe is in perfect balance, right? Okay. So when's the last time you saw an advertisement for a refrigerator? Mm. You probably don't remember.
No.
Right?
No.
But if you needed a refrigerator this weekend, you would start seeing advertisements in every newspaper, on TV, in social media, and you would start searching and selecting the best one.
That's now,
they've always been out there, just like everything is out there in the universe. But until you start and focus on a path, you're not going to see all that stuff that's out there. So that's my way of saying that you know, the universe conspires. That's a pretty strong word. It doesn't really conspire, but once you're on the track, you'll start noticing every way you know, things to improve your business and help you go forward that you had no idea was out there.
Well, a translation of that is just this whole realignment concept. Like, you're right now, you could be aligned towards, hey, I'm growing my business. And then tomorrow your car breaks down. It's like, okay, well now you're going to be aligned to trying to fix your car. So to your point, we're constantly being realigned on different paths.
Yeah.
And to your point though, I think it's important that we be aware of that and find the necessary paths that when we do get kicked off, like, you know, to get yourself back on that one path because you got to stay aligned on that.
That's right. Yeah.
I do like that. That's awesome. Now, was that something you learned from, like, did it take a little while for you to start really picking up on that as well when you were younger?
Well, I love reading all sorts of philosophy and spirituality and do a lot of meditating. And I really get a lot of insight from meditating, for instance, you know, where I just quieten down and, you know, I don't really think about anything specific, but because your mind's always busy, you know, and when it gets relaxed, solutions just seem to sort of come, you know, and you know, it's been pretty steady with me in that respect.
Well, and you don't have to give us the nitty gritty on this, but I'd love to pick your brain here on, you mentioned meditation, and it seems like it's funny because I must be getting realigned on this right now. I've been struggling to incorporate that more into my lifestyle because the coaches that I have worked with or clients that I've worked with, it's comes up here and there. And I don't do it consistently, but it seems like all the top performers who eventually start building massive continuous success in their career and life have eventually all added that into their life.
Yeah.
And I love talking about lifestyle balance and health and wellness. And how long have you been incorporating that into your life?
Well, I started believe it or not, I bought a book on yoga 38 years ago.
Wow.
So I've been doing yoga for 38 years.
Well done.
And just the exercises sort of lead you into meditation because you're doing a lot of deep breathing and heavy breathing and your mind gets oxygenated and suddenly before you even know it, you're meditating. So I can't say I ever started out, like, I didn't join TM or anything like that to learn to meditate.
Okay.
It just happens when I do yoga, and that's the easiest way for me to get into a meditation is just sit down and start stretching. Huh. And these people who claim, you know, the gurus who claim that's what made them, they're full of it because, you know, you jump on an airplane and go off to a convention, 3 days you don't meditate. You know, it's really hard to do it for as a lifestyle, and the only people who are successful at it are wearing orange robes and a ball, right? Because they've made that choice. But the average human is just got to fit it in wherever they can. And I'm really successful doing it. The last thing before I go to sleep, I sit up in my bed and, you know, just meditate till I sort of drop off. And sometimes in the mornings, usually the best time for me is I grab a smoothie and then go sit down and meditate. You know, that half hour or 45 minutes in the morning seems to be the most calming, because it sets you up for the day and it makes your lifestyle, whatever happens that day, it's just so much easier to deal with.
Yeah, I recently had on a couple of people, actually this last episode that aired Monday morning yesterday, and they talked about their peak performance coaches. That's
right.
You know, neuro-linguistic programming and all that.
Sure,
and
sure.
It does make sense. It's like if you want to have a good night's sleep, you need to wind your brain down. You don't want it wound up. And just like in the morning, you need to wind it back up. So it is interesting that meditation can be applied in both those situations.
Yeah, but I have nights where I've, you know, one of the things in my book, I've got all these little tips about being an entrepreneur, you know. One of them is that I always have a piece of paper and a pen next to my bed on the bedside table, because there are nights I'll be 2 o'clock in the morning just churning situations over and over in my head that are imponderable, and I write down a note, and then because the problem is usually it's a loop that the same thought goes over and over and over. And the minute you write it down, even in the dark, it's gone. And then you relax into another level, you know. So meditation's great, but, you know, in our lifestyle, we just got to grab it when we can.
Okay. I like that lesson, because I've struggled with it, but I've realized that, to your point, as long as you're making the effort to fit it in,
yeah,
you're probably ahead of most people.
Absolutely.
Okay. This is awesome, by the way. I'm loving this. So when you met, like, I don't know if you, I'm sure you don't remember everything from meeting Rich Brocchini, but he's obviously been his big investment, I know, for this year. When I met him we met last year at an event called Thrive, Make Money Matter.
Yes, I remember that.
And I'm going back again this year. This year it's in Vegas, and I can't wait. It's actually a very powerful speaking event, and I'm just wondering if those are the types of events you enjoy speaking at. I know you haven't spoken at Thrive at all yet.
No, not yet. I'd like to do it sometime.
Oh my God, it's right up your alley, because we had Jack Canfield last year.
Yeah,
and
no,
I feel
it's a perfect audience for me. Yeah,
yeah, because it's everybody is from all different kinds of walks of life, different kinds of business backgrounds, lifestyle backgrounds, and that was what opened my mind up when I arrived, because I'm usually going to other conferences, conventions. I'm trying to, you know, continuing education.
Yep.
And going there was like, that was the first time where it was like, wow, we have all these different speakers over 2 or 3 days. And the master message behind all of that was that higher level of thinking, which is, improving performance and everything else, but also helping you understand that it's okay to make a lot of money or be successful once you've figured out how to make that money matter in your life and create that balance.
Yeah. Yeah,
and Rich and I need to get you hooked up with the founder, man. Because if you haven't been networked with them yet, I think that would be an amazing get for them to get you in there. So
okay, well, I'd really appreciate that.
Yeah,
always looking for good. But yeah, that Thrive audience is a really vibrant group of entrepreneurs.
Yes, I've been loving it, and it's really helped me grow. And obviously, besides meeting awesome people like Rich, and I know his focus this year is becoming a better. He's really heavily focusing on his public speaking and coaching and everything else. But
family at the same time. Which
he's a big
great.
Family man. He is. Yeah. He's done a very good job with that. I was going to ask you about that. So I don't have a ton of family responsibilities. My girlfriend and I have just chosen a life for ourselves, so to speak. So obviously, I'm guessing you probably built a successful family over the years as well. What is that lifestyle balance like today versus when you were building the company? I mean, is it... I don't know. Is it just as busy, or is it more balanced now because you get to choose when you're traveling and when you're speaking? Or,
well, I get to choose whether I accept speaking things or not, but I pretty much travel a lot.
Okay.
But my daughters now are in their late 20s, and we've developed a bond that it wouldn't matter what part of the earth we're in, we're still very, very close.
Okay.
But when I was building the UGG business, when they were, say, between the ages of 3, they're 2 years apart, so 3 and 5 all the way through to 7 and 9, that was when I did most of my traveling. I racked up 2 million frequent flyer miles.
Oh, dear Lord.
Flying around to retailers all across the country, working with sales reps and things. And I used to, no matter where I went, I would find a postcard and mail it back to them. And they've got, you know, remember those plastic lunch boxes that the kids take to school?
Well, when I was a kid, I had a metal one, but yeah.
Okay, well, they've got a couple of those plastic lunch boxes just full of every single postcard, and it's one of their most treasured mementos, you know?
I like that.
Even from the road, I made an effort to sort of stay in touch.
Well, and I could tell you, quick background more into me, I kind of slightly hinted on it. So I grew up on a farm when I was a kid, working hard, and then never thought about going to college, then tried going to college, dropped out, worked for a couple startup companies,
right.
Started chasing the corporate dreams, thought I wanted that, realized that was hell on earth. And then in 2010 and 2011, after I went back to finish my degree on nights and weekends, because I felt that I needed to close that chapter and have that achievement. And
yeah.
Because I was still in the mindset where, oh, once you have your degree, then you fill in that checkbox and everybody wants you.
Gotcha.
But something switched in my brain chemically, and I decided, you know what? Before I get too crazy back into that world, I'm going to take 2 years and go be a wildland firefighter. So, and I know you guys have wilderness firefighting in Australia.
Sure.
So that's how I got to really experience all of the Western U.S. and that was a life changing lifestyle.
Oh, bet it was. Yeah.
And that's where I really picked up on a lot of what you've been talking about here, which is the crazy lifestyle balance. And that's when I really started loving the same thing. I would send postcards all the time. If I had the opportunity, we're doing a food stop or a beverage stop or refueling the vehicles when we're driving from wildfire to wildfire, it was, yeah, man, I'll grab a postcard and mail it. So my mom's got a few.
I never heard of anybody else doing that. That's
well,
good.
Not at your level. I was, and I was already in my 30s. So I was considered the old guy on the crew.
Yeah.
And, My mom was like, she would actually, I came home from firefighting, you know, at the end of the summer, and she had a whole bunch of them hanging up. I was like, oh, you kept them all.
That's so really cool, yeah.
So it's funny, you were doing it for your kids, and I was doing it for my parents, because
Yeah. Even
in my 30s, I think it was me feeling a little guilty. I think that's what it was. And they never travel. So it was me being able to share, besides the photographs I was taking and sharing them all over social media back then, I was like, I was old school. I wanted to physically give them something as well, like a postcard. So
good for you.
Yeah, I think that's so. They have all of those still to this day.
They love them. Yeah, they pull them out every now and again.
They got to build like a giant collage. They probably have enough to build a whole wall or something. That'd be crazy.
Yeah.
So, quick little hack I'd like to get from you is from those days of UGG to now, crazy travel. How do you focus on balancing the health piece of it? Are you like really dialed in with your nutrition and lifestyle because you're getting the meditation and everything too? I mean,
it's always been very natural for me.
Oh, okay.
I still surf. I haven't snowboarded this year. I've snowboarded 24 years in a row, and I will get up to the local mountains this season just to keep the track record intact.
Oh, you better. I'm a huge skier, so you better get back on the snow.
Okay. But a good week for me is, you know, one or two yoga sessions at a yoga school, one workout at the gym just to keep toned. I live right on the beach in Cardiff down here in San Diego, so I there's about a mile of beach just next to me, so I usually run that barefoot once or twice a week, and you know, if the surf's great, I'll surf. If it's not, I'll try and get a game of golf in or something. So, and as far as eating goes, I about 10 years ago, my body just stopped processing red meat. You know, I started throwing it up just for no reason at all. So I realized, okay, my body's changed. So I'm
also the meat has changed over the years too.
Maybe that could be it. But I just live on vegetables and smoothies and soups. It keeps me really, really healthy.
Okay. Wow. That's interesting. Cause I always like asking a little bit of that because I think it's important to help people understand that no matter, you can have the most successful company, you can have them all the money in the world, but if your health is in the toilet, what's the point?
It is the worst. Yeah. When you have bad health, you can't even think about work, you know?
Well, plus let's all be honest, flying is not the healthiest form of transportation. I'll just say that.
Right.
It's basically a giant flying petri dish. But that's another thing. Like, you have all those stress levels in your life. So if you don't have your health and wellness somewhat dialed in, that amplifies that the recovery and the rest and the sleep and your energy on a daily basis too.
Yeah. I'm pretty blessed that I've been able to, you know, I haven't had an illness in a couple of years now.
Yep. That's awesome.
You know, no colds or flu or anything. So I think it just comes back to the diet and the amount of exercise I do.
Well, and I think it's important that, and I don't, if you don't mind me asking, how old are you now?
Just turned 70.
All right. Congratulations. Happy birthday.
Hard to believe. I still have trouble saying that number.
Well, I mean, you probably don't want to hear this, but I'll be turning 40 this year. So I'm sorry.
Good for you.
I got some catching up to do.
That's a great period. Good for you. Congratulations.
Well, and I think the important number, the message you just told us too was, yeah, you're balancing in yoga and meditation and healthy nutrition, but you're also incorporating in at least one day a week of like strength training because your body has to be reminded to be tested once in a while. So strength training is very, very important.
Yeah. I don't try and build a big, huge physique or anything, but I've always been blessed with a good physique. You know, as a kid, I was so athletic. I played rugby against England and against the New Zealand All Blacks.
Oh, you were a rugby guy?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. Yeah. And since I came to America, I coached San Diego State.
Wow.
University and took them to winning the nationals. So, you know, I've got rugby in my blood, but I've always been healthy and I've always had a great physique. So all I do is maintain it. I don't try and build any bigger. I just keep the body I've got.
I love rugby as a sport. I got turned onto it because I'm not a player in it, but friends of mine locally here, because I live here in Allentown, Pennsylvania, we're about an hour north of Philly, about an hour plus west of New York City.
Gotcha.
And here's some big universities like Lafayette College, Lehigh University.
Yeah, great rugby schools. Yeah.
And yeah, but one of my good friends, actually a number of my good friends, all played rugby, men and female, at Lehigh. So I used to go and watch some of their events and watch the sevens and everything else. And some of them now still to this day play rugby in like adult leagues. So it's cool.
I played in the Golden Oldies about 3 years ago when they had their tournament in San Diego.
Really?
Yeah.
What was that like?
Well, you wear different colored shorts, you know. white means I'm a stud. You can do anything. And I was wearing red, which means I can tackle you as hard as I want, but you got to be easy on tackling me.
Oh, wow.
And it went all through to pink shorts. There was a Japanese team where everybody was in their 80s, and they all wore pink shirts, which means don't even think about touching me.
And okay, so they're a little fragile.
Yeah, it was like the Grateful Dead of rugby.
So I was going to ask you, what was the age range on that? Was it all 60 plus, 70 plus? I mean, what was the...
The youngest ones are in their 30s and 40s.
And that's a regular thing?
Like the Golden? It's like a tour. It goes city to city all around the world. It's like a Grateful Dead tour of rugby players.
Wow. And that's... Yeah, so anybody who's ever played rugby has the opportunity to apply for that? Or...
Yeah. Yeah,
that
well, you join,
cool.
you join a team. The teams join, and then you join a team. Yeah.
So you still haven't given that up yet. I love that. That's pretty cool. Well, that's the whole point, right? You got to remind ourselves that we're still young, and why not keep doing the things you love?
That's why I said it was hard to say the word 70.
Hey, I admittedly don't know many 70-year-olds, or even 60-year-olds, or even 50-year-olds that are still playing rugby.
Or surfing, yeah.
Yeah, and surf, exactly. That's also impressive. I love that. I mean, I have every Friday I coach CrossFit in my free time.
Okay.
And the past couple of years we had some local rugby guys, and they would come in, you know, in the winter because they needed to get some off-season training in, and we would train them and work them out here, and it's just cool because those were the adult rugby players, right? Those are the guys that hey, we're in our 30s and our 40s and still playing rugby. So
sure,
yeah. They're a little bit more. They always had at least one or two like college kids mixed into the team, which was
There's always that.
It was night and day, man. You see this guy who just can crush everybody. I'm like, how old are you? He's like, oh, I'm a master's student at Lehigh. I'm like, oh, okay, that makes more sense.
Yeah.
So real quick, there was something off your website that I really wanted to get more feedback on you, and I know that it's in big bold text because this is a big part of your message, and I was just hoping to get a little bit more meat and potatoes behind it, but you have the tagline here that passion plus innovation equals your catalyst for change. So clearly we're referencing the book and everything you speak on. Was this something from your UGG days, or was this just something that over the years you just felt this was the equation? Like this was it.
Yeah, this came from, God, I wish, it's embarrassing that I can't remember the name of the book.
There's a lot of books out there.
There's a girl who has a matrix of all of the different qualities. And it was like a fill in all these questions and it'll lead you to your spot on the matrix. And mine was passion and innovation. And when you looked at what that related to, it was change, you know, being a catalyst for change. And that's quite recent, like in the last 4 or 5 years that I've been using that.
Okay.
But when I read it, I went, oh my God, that's been my life. I've always been passionate about everything. You know, I'm the world's greatest optimist, and that's worked for me and against me many times. So the passion was always there, and you know, and just the enthusiasm for life, you know, has always made me be a bit of a leader and a risk taker.
Sure.
And that's where the change comes. You know, I've taken on some risks that most people would just be, you know, they'd be.
Well, they'd probably be shitting their pants.
Well, thanks for saying that.
I don't edit anything on this show. I just say it how it is. You can say it how it is. Don't worry about it.
Well, people are sometimes shocked at some of the things that I've done, you know, in business.
Yeah.
But it's been a calculated gamble every time. And, you know, if you stay doing the same thing, you're going to always get the same results.
Sure.
And the only way to change is to change. And the only way to do that is to do something new.
All right. So real quick on that, people are slammed against the wall with the fear, right? It's not even a speed bump. It's usually a wall for most of these people.
Absolutely. And
what is your, like, I don't know, if you were coaching everybody who's listening, like, what is the one thing that you've seen? It's like, besides the answer, you know, just do it. But I mean, what do you feel is a great catalyst to help just boom, start flipping that switch and like, just get over that wall, man, like climb it.
Okay. Well, everyone listening should grab a pencil right now.
Okay, guys, there we go. You got a few seconds, or just go back to the show notes, because we're going to put it in the show notes.
Okay. Well, this is critical for your show notes.
Okay.
Because you hit on the big word fear. Mm-hmm. Fear is debilitating. And I've got 4 statements that I picked up in a philosophical book over 25 years ago. And they were so profound that I wrote them out. I typed them out and put them in the front of my daily planner. Mm-hmm. And I've carried that page forward for 25 years. And it's 4 statements. Feast upon uncertainty.
Okay.
Fatten upon disappointment.
You say fatten on disappointment?
Fatten, get fat on disappointment. Enthuse over apparent defeat.
Ooh, I like that one.
And invigorate in the presence of difficulties. And if you, it doesn't matter what hits you in life, and I'm talking life because this is bigger than just business. No matter what hits you in life, those 4 are the most positive statements that you'll ever hear. And they all address horrific things, you know, disappointment, you know, difficulties. They take everything and instead of becoming a victim, you know, poor me, why did this happen to me? The world's not fair. Should I, you know, I always get the bad end of it.
Yeah, blame game, whatever.
Take every one of those things that hit you and match it under those 4 criteria, you're going to realize, oh my God, I can get around that. They're the 4 most powerful statements for living a really, really healthy, successful life.
So basically anything that's happening, anything negative, anything that could be potentially bringing you down, you're saying,
your girlfriend leaves you and you're distraught, you know?
Yeah.
Feast upon the uncertainty, you know, fatten the disappointments. God, just relish it.
Just,
you know,
take it in, man.
I mean, so many people never get busted up with and they never understand the depth of their emotions.
Yes. I talk about this all the time when people have just been, and I can't think of a better word of this, like spoiled in life. Like they've been spoon fed everything they've always had somebody looking out for them. And it's like, you know what? Shed yourself of that protective bubble and learn what failure is like. And you're saying, embrace those fears, man. Find a place in all 4 of those bullet points.
Yeah, experience. Just relish the experience, because that's, you know, when you look back on the pain of things that have happened and how you've overcome it, they're the best times. They're always the best times.
Well, it's also funny, since you and I are kind of like book buffs, have you heard of, it's, I believe, becoming a best-selling book now, but she's also a big speaker like you, have you heard of the 5-second rule?
No, I haven't.
Really? Okay. But she, her book, I think her name is Mel. I'm just blanking on her full name right now. I just started listening to it like literally last week, downloaded the Audible version. And yeah, Mel Robbins, and her website's melrobbins.com. But the book is called The 5-Second Rule. And she talks about how when you hit the fear or the, even before you get to those four bullet points, she says that literally just taking that 5 seconds and count backwards, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, and make a decision. She said, if you allow yourself to go beyond that 5 seconds, your brain is just naturally designed to protect you. So you'll probably not take action. Like you have, she talks about how important it is to literally give yourself 3 to 5 seconds max, but you got to make a decision and you got to just go for it. If you wait longer than that, the fear will take you over and your brain is designed to protect you chemically, hormonally, and you'll shut down. Yeah.
No, I haven't heard that. I'll look for that. Yeah.
I think the philosophy that you brought forth in those 4 points combined with some of the philosophy she talked about that book, like, oh my God, I literally after listening to that book last week, I was like, I would love to see both of you on like a panel and discussing this stuff. I think it'd be so cool.
It really would be, yeah.
Yeah, and actually for our listeners, guys, we were talking about this before the show started. So again, to remind you guys, throughout this whole episode, make sure you go to briansmithspeaker.com, and it's Brian with an I, not a Y. But we're talking about a lot of this content is in his book. And most importantly, Brian, you happen to tell me that you're going to be remastering the book and bringing it back out in a new release as well as an Audible release, or are you just re-releasing Audible only?
No, next year I'm going to update it.
Okay.
And bring in a bunch of new stuff that I've learned from speaking on the stage.
Nice.
And we're going to release it as a 40th anniversary edition because next year is, you know, the 40th year of UGG.
Yeah.
Since I first pair into Australia. Are you from Australia?
So do you still go back to Australia, by the way?
All the time, yeah. My mom's alive there. She's 98.
Wow.
Yeah, my dad died a couple of years ago. He was 98, so I like to keep in touch with her.
Oh, so your mom was the younger?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. But she's still going strong.
She loves every day she wakes up.
See,
yeah.
It's lifestyle. Mindset and lifestyle are so important.
Yeah.
Our brain controls so much of the physical. It's not even funny.
Oh, I 100% believe that. Yeah.
So for our listeners, I mean, again, guys, and real quick, Brian's everywhere, by the way. You can find him anywhere. He's on Facebook. He's on the website, obviously, briansmithspeaker.com, but he's also on Twitter. You can find him under @UGG founder. So the good thing is, like, people can follow you pretty much anywhere these days, it looks like.
Yeah, I love that.
Yeah. Are you managing all your own feeds? Are you doing your own tweets and Instagrams and stuff, or do you got people on your team for that?
Pretty much. I've just hired somebody to help me because it's becoming a pretty big job.
Yes. Especially as you do more and more speaking. I mean, you've been speaking now professionally for three plus years?
3 and a bit, yeah.
Yeah. You're going to grow, especially with technology nowadays, and as more and more people find books, it's hilarious. Once somebody puts a book out, but your book was out first before speaking.
That's right, yeah.
Yeah. So I've watched it both ways. I see people release a book and then they get popular. Or I see people releasing like a podcast, or they're building their brand, then they release the book. Either way, there's a clear catalyst there too, and boom, things are amplified.
Yeah, social media is another animal. A quick anecdote: back in '95, I remember walking up the corridor of my office, and we just installed desktop computers for all the staff. And I poked my head into my secretary's door and I said, "Nikki, take down this letter." And she did shorthand, so she took down the letter, and then she said to me, "Brian, you know, you can do this yourself now. We have emails." And I said to her, "I will never need to learn email. I've got you."
Ah.
Right? So fast forward to now, and I am so comfortable with email, but I'm at the same stage with social media as I was back then with her.
So, all right, baby steps, right? You got
to really having to. I'm forcing myself to learn it because otherwise, imagine if I didn't learn emails.
That's a good point. And for your benefit, though, as long as you know enough about social media to understand it. But then, yeah, like any smart person, somebody who's built a company as successful as UGG, it's like, okay, you also know when to outsource and let the people who know what they're doing do it.
Exactly, yeah, yeah.
I mean, I know a few people that do manage some of their own feeds for communication points of view, but they still have somebody on the team doing the actual marketing piece and the content push. But then some of them, like, I know there's a very popular podcast in California called Fitness Confidential, and Vinny Tortorich, he's also a co-host on Adam Carolla's very successful podcast.
Gotcha.
And he will answer all of his own tweets. He won't let anybody manage the Twitter feed. He wants to do all the messaging and all the commenting on there.
Good for him. Yeah.
And he's in his 50s. So and he hates social media. He just wants nothing to do with Facebook.
but
he loves Twitter. So.
Yeah, interesting.
Well, this has been awesome. I don't want to take up too much of your time. We've already been talking for a long time here. We've talked before about when I bring these shows to a close, I want our co-hosts to have the honor of giving us the final words, the final messaging. And obviously this is your opportunity to do so, because this isn't just about me and my platform. It's about you and helping educate our listeners and share your message. So what is something, if people forget about everything else I said on the show or you said on the show, what's something that you want to leave behind, that you want people to have to really take out of this episode?
Okay. The best bit of advice I ever got for success was figure out what you can do best, better than anybody else, and you cannot help but be successful and make money, right? And I didn't understand that when my friend told me that, and years later I figured it out, and that's going to be part of my revised book, is a whole story. And I use this from the stage now. It's super powerful. But the quote from my book, and if you don't mind, I'll just hold it up again.
Bring it up again, yeah. This will be on YouTube, so.
Okay, the birth of a brand, and it's launching your entrepreneurial passion and soul. And everything we've talked about is sort of in my book, but there's a whole slew more. But here's the most, it's fun, but it's also the most important piece of philosophy I leave from the stage. Mm-hmm. And without a doubt, somebody sees me a year or two later, they go, oh, I remember you're the guy that said the quickest way for a tadpole to become a frog is to live every day happily as a tadpole.
Oh.
And it sounds pretty trite, but it's such deep philosophy that if you can be happy every day doing what you're doing, trying to get a little bit better at what you do, your niche, after time, you'll end up being really successful. Like when I started UGG, I had no idea about the footwear industry. I had no idea about importing and customs. I had no idea about the tanning industry. I didn't know about retail. I didn't know marketing, you know, but I became the best in my little niche, better than anybody else in the world at sheepskin boots.
That you did.
And look what happened.
Yeah.
Right? So that philosophy is so powerful. The quickest way for a tadpole to become a frog is live every day happily as a tadpole.
I love that message. Wow.
Thanks. Yeah.
Well, Brian, hang on here. I'll give you a proper goodbye. We'll close out the show here. So to our listeners, guys, there it is, man. Be happy living as a tadpole. You'll mature. The patience is a virtue here. So again, to our listeners, guys, please check out briansmithspeaker.com. Follow him on all the social media feeds. Get ready for that new remastered book being released next year. And again, this is what our messaging is all about, guys. We're here to fuel your health, your business, your lifestyle. Brian has just dropped some serious knowledge on us today. I'm so honored and so privileged to be able to bring his messaging through our platform to you guys. And again, we've talked about it before. We talk about it all the time. Keep living the fired up epic life. And we'll talk to you guys again soon. Good day, Live the Fuel fans. Hey, this is Scott Mulvaney, your host and founder of Live the Fuel. I just wanted to take a couple minutes here at the end of the episode to thank you for listening and also share some resources for you. So number one, please, thank you. Thank you for listening and thank you for subscribing. If you haven't subscribed yet, please subscribe to the show so you can get regular your updates. I release new episodes every single week. More importantly, if you are using iTunes or you have an iTunes account, please go on to iTunes. I know it takes a few minutes to actually do this, but please submit a show review for the Live the Fuel show. It's one of the few ways we can use the system to help increase the exposure of the show. So again, if you take a moment to do that, please and thank you. All right, guys. More importantly, I want to get into some resources to help support you guys. If you go to livethefuel.com, I do have a resources guide online. It's called the Super Sevens Resources Guide. And in there, I have 21 different tips and tools just from that I've used over the past 3 to 4 years to help me get my different businesses up online, but also it's just health mindset related content. But anyway, if you go on there and subscribe to my email list, you'll get that guide back to you for free. So enjoy some free content. Now, more importantly, if you're on Facebook, be sure to reach out to us and, number one, like the Live the Fuel page, but number two, join our Facebook group community called The Fuel Tank. Please submit a request and I'll be happy to welcome you into our community and help you along your journey as well. And then the last piece of this little message for you guys is our resources page. If you go to livethefuel.com/resources or just click on resources in the toolbar, I put in a number of companies on here that I've started growing relationships with that I trust and that I actually recommend. So first off is Villa Capelli. This is one of the purest olive oils that I've ever tasted. I've talked about it on the show before. So please use my discount code. If you use Fuel, F-U-E-L, at the checkout when you're on their website, you get 10% off your order. So please use that and thank you. More importantly, also in the health category in that page, you'll find a company called Pure Vitamin Club. We've actually had the founders on the show multiple times. I highly recommend this company. Please use my click-through link on the website. I don't have a lot of affiliations, but this is one that actually may give me a couple pennies back for every time people actually click through my logo for their Pure Vitamin Club on my website. So again, I highly recommend them for pure magnesium, pure vitamins, and their new B12 vitamin coming out. And the last piece of this message here is Isagenix, guys. Not everybody is into nutritional companies, supplementation, but many, many people are because our food is nutrient deficient. And we've talked about this from a health perspective before. So again, if you guys are looking for a change in your lifestyle, heck, even just for a side hustle business, but more importantly, just healthy lifestyle changes, please consider reaching out to me. I have Isagenix linked on there, but please feel free to private message me or set up a time on my scheduler on the website. And I'll be happy to talk to you more about this and consider working with me and my team. I love helping people get healthier. All right, guys, last piece of this message here is business related. If you look in the business category on there, because we do talk about health, business, and lifestyle, I do have a couple other companies in here. AWeber. AWeber is the best when it comes to email marketing. So please use my link there. I use it for all of my clients and all of my email marketing. There's a lot of different sources out there, but these guys are awesome. And more importantly, all of my IT, all of my website hosting, everything now goes through a company called Singularis IT. I mountain bike and road bike with the owner, Simone. He's been on the show as well. Good people, great technology. Highly recommend them for outsourcing your IT solutions. They're freaking phenomenal. So anyway, guys, I just want to, again, thank you for listening. Please use these tips, tricks. Please visit livethefuel.com. Check out the resources page. Get that e-guide for free by hopping on the email list and go to the Fuel Tank on Facebook and join our community. I'll talk to you guys again soon.
Thank you for listening to Live the Fuel. Visit us at livethefuel.com. Stay connected on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and more at Live the Fuel. Live the fired up epic life. Hashtag Live the Fuel.